I'm Frank Vaughn. It's August 31st, 2025. Apparently, it's a long weekend. I hope you're enjoying your long weekend. I often don't register long weekends ever since the farming days because all I ever did was work in them. And even now that I'm not farming, life continues on the same, whether it's a long weekend or a Friday, Saturday, Monday, Tuesday. They all kind of look the same, but there's a whole pile of people out there that these holidays mean a lot to, because it's some of the only times they get away from being a wage slave. So hopefully you're enjoying your weekend. My primary focus is the hope, maybe my primary hope, it is my focus too, is to avoid pain for people, citizens of this country who were born here. You happen to be a citizen by merit of the fact that you were born here, or you came here and you got a citizenship. But the fact is, in one way or another, the vast majority of people who live in this country can't leave it, don't want to leave it, were born here, and that was the luck of the draw. And it hasn't been a terrible deal, okay? There's a lot worse places in the world to be. The problem is, the pain factor is about to amplify because of the policies of the governments of this nation. And it's not just the federal government. The provinces, many of them are going along with it. Or, in their attempts to protest the policies of Ottawa, they only go lukewarm. They don't go full tilt. They don't understand that the problem facing the citizens who live in this country and pay for everything is the government in Ottawa itself, the system that underlies that government, and the fact that there is no change on the horizon. And before we continue, I'm not committed to being a doomer. I wish there was more good news on the horizon for the country that I was born in. But I'm not going to lie to you and sugarcoat anything, because you have enough. If you don't like what I have to say and you don't think I'm positive enough, you can go over to CBC where the rose-tinted glasses paid for by the taxpayer are never taken off. On this channel, we talk about reality and we try to fix problems. This is from the Fraser Institute. And it's from the winter of 2018, which is an old problem, the flight of capital from Canada. This is talking about capital flight and how it's accelerated over the course of time. Now, this is from 2018, and it's also the Fraser Institute. I'm told by the left in this country I can't listen to anything Fraser says because there's some kind of conservative right-wing think tank. So let's go to Better Dwelling, Canada's capital flight risk or crisis, record exit by foreign and domestic investors. Now, this is from August 28th. 2025. Canada is bleeding capital at the fastest rate since the financial crisis, StatsCan shows. Investors pulled billions from the country, billions in quarter two, in Q2, with domestic investors joining the exodus. Everybody's getting out because we've elected and re-elected over and over again these crazy communists, these green energy boffins, who want to risk all prosperity and growth and potential for growth in this country. I'm not talking about population growth. I'm talking about the growth in your prosperity, because the growing population is one of the problems. It's actually kind of crazy. There's so much to the story. Canada hasn't seen foreign capital flight like this since the financial crisis. And it's worth noting that in other international news, is despite boycott, Canadians have poured over a record of $50 billion into U.S. securities at the height of trade war. So Canadians, money is leaving the country. And even in the midst of all the elbows up nonsense and all the virtue signaling about fighting the United States, people canceling their vacations and buying different brands of ketchup, even though they're owned by American companies at the same time, Canadians have no problem buying U.S. stocks. And why is that? Because that's where the growth potential is. That's where the capital can go and potentially see itself being rewarded in dividends or gains. You can't find that in Canada because we have an anti-business government, and we don't have, I would dare say, we don't have a single provincial premier who actually wants to deal full on with the systemic structural problem that this nation represents to the very people who pay for everything. And if you don't like the New York Post because you think it's somehow too pro-Trump, we can go to Fortune. Despite snubbing U.S. tourism and boycotting American goods, Canadians are pouring more into U.S. stocks than they have in over 35 years. It's kind of crazy how Canadians are in such a state a fundamental denial about the reality of their pocketbook, about the reality of their nation, about the reality of the post-nationalism that this government has engaged and how it has absolutely destroyed your prospects for a brighter future as a Canadian. Like, we may have to seek our fortunes outside of the matrix of this country, and I don't understand why nobody's talking about that eventuality, because they're certainly leading us in that direction. The people who say they're trying to save the country, the ones who dress themselves up in the flag right now, are the very people who have adopted the policies that destroy this nation. You know, people want to pick on the Liberals about carbon taxes, and Polyev's on the campaign trail again talking about axing the tax and all this nonsense. They still subscribe to the net zero agenda. Even Danielle Smith, she just wants to kick the ball out to 2050. This is one of the biggest frustrations that I've seen come out of all the town halls that she's doing, which I think is meant to dissipate the energy of a sovereignist movement in Alberta. I think maybe Polyev is in Alberta to help with that process, to make sure that the West stays in its chains. I hear this language about carbon capture and lowering emissions and pollution. They all use the same language. CO2 is not pollution. I don't understand why they're dedicated to this language and these talking points, because it's not winning them voters. The radicals are not voting UCP. The radicals are not voting for the CPC. Speaking their language isn't doing anything for you. So you could just abandon the whole concept, start telling the truth, and start talking about prosperity, and you won't lose a single point in the polling. You're not gaining, and you're not losing. The only thing we're losing is the economics of prosperity. The idea that we can build and we can grow and we can produce resources and we can get rich without regulating, without the government having to step in and create a whole new industry in carbon capture. They're all talking the same language. Whether they have the same timetable or not is beside the point. Here's another worrying sign that I see coming out of Alberta. Smith calls Alberta slaughterhouse accused of exploiting foreign workers. Positive example for other businesses, for those of you who don't know. And I'm sure you know if you've been watching this channel for a while, Canada's created a slave class called the temporary foreign worker. So it screws everybody. The only people who make money off the TFW program are the businesses who take advantage of it, the owners of those businesses. You as a Canadian citizen, whether you've been here for five generations or you just got off the boat with your citizenship and came in the right way, you get displaced. You can't get a job. Your unemployment rates are soaring. And that's another side of this. The only people hiring anywhere are the public sector, but I digress. We got to stick on the point here. The TFW program screws everybody, the citizen, but it also screws the TFW, who are a glorified slave labor class. They don't have any rights. They don't have any representation. And heaven forbid they actually start hiring lawyers and getting organized like the international students in Brampton. Geez. We're in big trouble because now we have a diaspora that's in this country that don't even have citizenships that are able to protest and affect our politics. That's it's so crazy. But these TFWs are slave labor. They're underpaid. They're often living in poor housing. And if they complain, the threat of deportation hangs over their head. And for some reason, Smith is calling it a positive example. Now, where is this issue? We have... We're talking about a meat packing facility in Brooks, Alberta. I've been to Brooks six or seven times this year. This is Bragg. This is he recently published a paper on labor dynamics in Alberta's meat packing industry, and regularly visits Brooks for research. He's pushing back against Daniel Smith because she says Brooks is booming, and it's booming in part because of the TFW program. Anyway, he says, I've been to Brooks six or seven times this year, and the number one issue there is people can't find work. Now, this is an interesting one for me because I have personal relations with people who lived in Brooks. I've got a few of them. It's not just in isolation. I've picked up a number of friends in Brooks over the years. Most of them have left at this point because we have to go back to 2018, 2019, 2020 for some of the conversations that I had with people. I haven't talked to them in years, but in the process of selling the residence in Brooks to go somewhere else because there's so many people, crime is so high, and a lot of it is the TFW program. The place is being flooded with temporary immigrants and probably permanent residents too. And the people there are called racist when they start complaining about the fact that their kids can't walk in the streets anymore without being harassed by foreigners who can barely speak English. It's a real problem that Smith thinks this is great. Now, who is Smith making happy by thinking that the JBS plant pivoting towards TFWs in 2005 after a bitter strike led to resettled refugee workers? It's so crazy that so much of the conversation in this country revolves around refugees, immigrants, TFWs. We're talking about people that don't even pay into the system. They haven't been here, and so much of our political conversation revolves around these people. There were some 1,622 TFWs working in Alberta's meat product manufacturing sector in 2023, the last year for which complete statistics were available. So we're not even getting the full story. But the thing that I wanted to highlight is down at the bottom, they quote this guy, Arno Dorkson, who's a counselor for the surrounding Newell County, said the company's recruitment of workers from around the world has given Brooks the cosmopolitan feel of big cities like Toronto and Vancouver without the social tensions. Are you kidding me? The people that I know who fled from Brooks talked about social tension. Who is this guy? Well, the fact is I can actually answer that. Where is it? The headline is, former progressive conservative MLA acclaimed as councillor in County of Newell. This is back in 2021. So this is a progressive conservative. Everywhere you scratch the surface around here, in this country, in Alberta, in out east with Tim Houston, when you see progressive conservatives, when you see former progressive conservative, you can bet your bottom dollar that they're advancing the policies of the federal government, the Liberal government. They're all liberals in disguise. We used to call them red Tories. But when it comes to a lot of Daniel Smith's positions, when you scratch the surface, it's former PC MLAs, former people, former donors who are the happiest with her idea that the TFW program is working out just fine for Alberta. But back to the point about social tension, it's been ongoing since before Daniel Smith was a premier. Brooks, Alberta isn't some kind of cosmopolitan wonder house. People are fleeing there. They don't feel comfortable in their own town anymore. Is that what you want for Alberta? Do you want a cosmopolitan feel that makes you feel like you're in Toronto or Vancouver somehow, quote unquote, without the social tension, which is just balderdash, complete and utter nonsense? Is that what you want for Alberta? Because that's what Daniel Smith is looking to deliver. Now, I know in some of these town halls, she gets feisty and she talks about Alberta or Alberta sending money east, and that Ottawa is the problem, and she says some words, and people in the audience applaud, and she has to speak louder. They're applauding because they like that sound. The problem is, that's all it is. It's just sound. Because underneath the surface, there's so much that she's committed to that emanates from Ottawa, and she won't even experiment with the possibility that Alberta could do better outside the context of this system, this country, that has no intention of changing direction. Now, if it's not CTV flying cover for an independent candidate who ran against Pierre Poilievre and actually promoting a kind of Stop the Steal campaign, where we went from saying that anybody who makes allegations that elections are anything but free and fair in Canada is some kind of traitor to the country, they went from that to promoting somebody who's basically saying that Pierre Poilievre stole the election. It's incredible because it's all on ideological line. It's not about the news. Here's another example. Alberta pro-Canada referendum petition movement attracts 500,000 website views and 7,000 volunteers. Now, you can have 7,000 volunteers coming in from all over the country. Anybody can sign up. They don't tell you where they come from. And they also go with 500,000 website views. Because why? A group's website for its petition to have Alberta declare its official policy is to remain in Canada has attracted more than 500,000 page views in its 90-day campaign. While it doesn't have an update as to how many of the almost 300,000 signatures it needs by October 28th, so they won't tell you how many people have signed. They will only tell you they've had 500,000 page views. And yet it gets a feature article Forever Canadian said Friday it has seen 550,000 views to its website and has enlisted 4,000 volunteer signature collectors and 3,000 volunteers who help in other areas. So this whole article is a free media plug and promotion for the Stay in Canada movement. They won't even tell you how many people signed, because if they did, what you'd find out is a lot less people are interested in this than are interested in the Alberta Prosperity Project. Meanwhile, Smith continues on her town hall tour, which fundamentally, every single one of these town halls, I encourage people to go. I encourage people to voice their opinions and be heard. But all of these town halls are prefaced on Smith's commitment to staying in Canada, to negotiating with the prison guard. 100 years is not enough for some people. 100 years of not being able to prosper, of having federal interference, of having terrible policies, not just for the West, but for the entire country, which are bankrupting us. You've seen how capital's leaving the country in record numbers. You've seen how people don't want to invest here. They're investing somewhere else. They're doing everything they can to get out of the Canadian dollar because people are scared and there's no change on the horizon. Carney is doing pride parades and going on vacation and hobnobbing in Europe while the country falls apart. They've inflamed rhetoric with the United States, put us in an absolutely abhorrent and terrible position, and it looks like the only thing we're going to get out of the Carney government is total capitulation. Not that I think Polyev would have done any different, because Polyev's position seems to be that Carney was supposed to be this master negotiator who was going to deal with Trump and he was going to take us into battle. And since Carney is actually doing the only thing he can do, which is fold, and he's not going to fold in a way that benefits Canadians, but let's just say, in principle, the only thing that Canada can do is try to repair and mend fences and actually return to diplomacy. So, in a way, Carney's doing exactly that. It's not going to be to our advantage. It's not going to be good for anybody. But Polyev's only criticism is that he needed to be tougher, that he needed to prosecute the war with the United States, the trade war with the United States, more vociferously. His critique seems to be that there's no peace to be had with the United States, so that if we had have elected him, he would have been far tougher. So Polyev's position seems to be that he would have maximize the damage to Canada rather than do what needs to be done with the United States, which is a climb down. We have to climb down. We got to return to diplomacy. I mean, the entire narrative, the entire story that the Conservative Party of Canada could have been telling us this entire time was the story of how 10 years of liberalism has completely damaged one of the best relationships on the planet, and we need to do something to repair it because America is a much bigger idea than Trump. Why they don't try that, man? Again, they're not winning any votes. These people who vote liberal are convinced that Polyev is Trump South. And it wouldn't matter, and it won't matter, when Carney gives the whole thing away, they're still going to think that way. It's incredible. Since the pandemic, Canada's public sector employment has grown nearly four times more than the private sector. And that has continued. What happens when the government, which doesn't make any money, they just have your money, is the only sector experiencing rapid growth in the country? Meanwhile, a lot of the growth that they generate into these statistics include those TFW slave class, that new TFW slave class that we talked about earlier in the video. So all this growth, what growth there is, isn't actually growth at all. If the public sector is growing at the same time as public debt is growing, you're not making any money. You're not actually growing anything. If Canadian citizens can't get jobs because they're displaced by temporary foreign workers, you're not actually growing anything. And once again, nobody's telling you this news. Here's CBC, front page at this hour. Rural BC residents may have to pay $1,000 a month for clean water. I guess that is somewhat of a tertiary truth. Things are going to get more expensive for you living in this country. So that's true. But you'll notice that many of the things that I'm talking about in this video never appear on the front page of CBC. They're not telling you about capital flight. They're not telling you about Canadians failing to invest in their own country. They're investing in other nations. They're not telling you about that. They're not telling you these super important stories. Charles Adler says, if there was documentation of a single payment from Alberta to Quebec, the premier would show it. This is tired old hokum. Person beside her, U Calgary economist Trevor Tome, educated many of us on this. She knows what he knows. But then what does education have to do with feeding pigeons? So he is referring to Daniel Smith's base as a bunch of pigeons getting breadcrumbs. And he's denying that equalization exists. It's very simple. Quebec is a net beneficiary, and Alberta is a net payer. That's it. That's all you need to know. Quebec doesn't develop its own resources. It's got this great big bank of wealth that it's sitting on underneath the ground. Energy, minerals, they don't develop it. And they've got an exemption for their hydroelectric generation, which they shouldn't have. All of this factors into an equalization calculation for my American audience who doesn't know. We have this communistic idea that the richer parts of the country have to subsidize the poorer parts of the country. The problem is Quebec is very rich. They could be even richer, but they fail to develop their own energy because they can just harvest Alberta's wealth. And that's what they do through the mechanism of the federal government. The federal government's the middleman who takes the money and then gives it to Quebec in net payments. Daniel Smith is totally right. And yet there's Charles Adler calling her people pigeons and willing to just lie about it. It's not about a direct payment from Alberta to Quebec. His issue is that Alberta doesn't hand the money directly to Quebec. They hand it to the middleman in Ottawa, and then Ottawa gives it to Quebec. It's the same damn thing, and Adler knows that. And by the way, Charles Adler is now a Canadian senator, an independent Canadian senator. All the media in this country will call him an independent Canadian senator. They will repeat verbatim without an ounce of integrity and without a moment's reflection. They'll repeat the talking point that Justin Trudeau made the Senate truly independent because he dissolved the Liberal caucus. But all the so-called independent senators are still liberals, including Adler. Some of the most progressive, activist, ideologically driven people are being named to the Senate, and your media calls them independent, including Charles. So we're stuck with this guy until he's 75, and this backwards notion where he literally looks in scorn upon the people in this country who are actually upset at the unfair balancing act that is equalization, that is the relationship between Ottawa and the provinces. But we are international news. This is the Tribune. You'll notice this text. Canadian dream fades for Indian students amid stricter visa policies, and buried in this is the actual number. There's a 20% drop. The approval rate for study permits in the second quarter of 2025 dropped by 20%, a sharp decline from the 80% approval rate seen just 3 years prior. We're only letting in 437,000 people in 2025, a 10% decrease from the previous year. And it has set the world of international student visas, centered in Brampton, Ontario. Brampton men abound. According to Barty Goal, a Brampton-based immigration consultant, the ending of the SDS and PGWP programs has hit the Indian students the most. But it also includes China, Vietnam, Pakistan, Brazil, Philippines. None of this has anything to do with Canada. If you go over on TikTok, international student Brampton, India, Canada, you're going to find... It's so disappointing. It's hard to talk about how bad it actually is, because there's entire websites, there's entire business models, firms, although I use that term very liberally, set up with the express intention of taking full advantage of Canada's basically open border policies. There's a whole plethora of influencers. Their whole thing is talking people into becoming refugees here in this country or taking advantage of the TFW program. I've seen videos where a person, very thick Indian accent, speaking poor English, is advising people to take advantage of the TFW program so that they can then get engaged in the black market in Canada because it's easy. And they talk about how the criminal system is easy. You'll get a slap on a wrist and a free ticket back to India. It's kind of crazy. But we're known in the world for being an open door welfare state. And honestly, the people who live in these places would be stupid not to take advantage of us. I don't actually fault them for it, because if you can get into Canada and you can become a refugee, if you can get into Canada as a TFW, if you can get into Canada in any number of ways, your life may improve. And good for you if it does. But at the same time, Canada's burning down around us. We're losing everything. We're losing everything we value. We're losing our nation. We're truly becoming post-national, as our government leaders have promoted. And that's what it looks like. It looks like TikTok videos of people soliciting the members of their nations to take full advantage of the red carpet treatment that Canada offers them. All of it paid for by you, the person who was privileged enough to be born here. I'm Frank Vaughn. That's all I got in me today. I'll see you in the next one.